The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection, and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On a network that covers more roads than any other carrier. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls. Finish up that presentation or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Hey, listen!
If I were your companion in a video game, what do you think my function or power would be? And then I'll answer for you. And I have not pre-thought an answer. I just thought of the question now.
Well, you score very high in wisecracks. So I feel like at the very least you'd be a Wheatley type figure, right? You'd be a Wheatley type. If it's my game, ooh, I'm the protagonist.
Sure.
You know, but not the villain.
No physical
turn.
Form is good for me.
I didn't think you'd mind. Yeah, I really felt like you'd be okay. But not like, I don't feel like you'd be like a Navi type figure who's like guiding me everywhere. I feel like you're more giving input and insight and opening a couple doors and stuff, you know, helping me out.
Yeah.
Keeping the journey fun.
Well, you'd have glasses, so you could use the glasses. You could burn stuff with this. No, that's not insightful enough. That doesn't do honor to our friendship, my lovely Adam.
Wait, who am I though?
No, of course you would be. I wasn't going to compare you to a specific companion.
See. Got it.
If the question I thought was just like functioner, I think in my life the purpose there's a lot of things that I appreciate about you, but the one that would get me through a video game would be like, there would be many situations where, it's not, because I'm playing Divinity 2 right now. Good game.
I know you love that game.
And I like games with persuasion, and there's few games who break persuasion down even further, right? To like persuasion, intimidation, whatever. I think I would just call it like directing, meaning I think there would be a lot of situations where I would be too awkward to... So if I'm a video game character, it's going to end in bloodshed. I'm just going to slaughter everyone because that's more comfortable for me trying to talk it out.
Sure.
But I'd be able to send my companion Adam in to just like cut the shit and say a few honest words, shake some hands and be like, oh, they're going to move out of your way, dude. You don't need to slaughter this whole village.
I got it all arranged.
That was very convenient.
I got it all arranged, buddy.
Yeah, that's what I appreciate about how you interact with the world.
Oh, That's very sweet.
Straight shooter gets shit done.
My God. I see. Yeah, that's actually
meant to be.
But it was because I feel like most people would assume the opposite, that I would be the hard charger slaughter 'em all type guy. So thank you. I think you've observed me well. I love that role. Happy to open a door or two for you. You know, happy to keep the violence at bay. Hey, this is One Upsmanship. Hope you're enjoying this so far, because today on this,
that's the door opening to reveal the logo One Upsmanship. Sorry.
Oh, no, I love that. That's how that we should replace our song with that sound.
Probably.
Why not? Shake it up. Why not? Anyway, I'm one of your hosts, Adam Ganser, and with me is maybe the protagonist, or maybe just a non-playable but gorgeous companion. Introduce yourself, sir.
I'm Michael Swayman. No, it's an escort mission. I'm trying to die. I'm doing dumb shit. Adam, you're going to have to keep me alive. Yeah, this harkens back to our old format.
Yeah,
I'm Sonic drowning, man. Ooh. You have 5 seconds. Oof. So,
God, or you mean Tails.
I'm going to need a lot of support this
you
time.
You mean Tails on literally any piece where you have to deal with Tails. Anyway, bomb
That's
dropped.
Right.
So today.
You've been blasted.
So look, today we decided, because we realized that sometimes we need to do stuff that's not just video game reviews, that this show encompasses all kinds of video game conversations. And one of them that we haven't done in quite a long time is sort of ranking our favorite video game characters, specifically our favorite companions. I thought that was kind of a fun idea, and we apparently labored a lot over it from what Mike is telling me. Mike's telling me we really labored over it.
We have to work hard in the opinion minds for our beautiful shipheads.
Yeah.
Note that it's favorite, not best, although I think they're related. Like, I will argue for their greatness, of course. Mm-hmm. That's why they're my favorite. Mm-hmm. But favorite admits subjectivity, which is more fun anyway, because we get a more diverse list. Because if we went best, we said there's a couple we're like, well, probably that in the top three and that in the top three, and that rounds out your top three. And you're like, yeah, but everyone knows that. That's like, don't forget to mention the Beatles. So favorite's more interesting.
I agree. I also like, having gone back and re-listened to our favorite villains list, I'm now happy how much those two lists that we made diverge from any listicle that you Googled. And I think that will happen again today. Or at least I hope so.
Well, Adam, hold on to that thought, because I have a challenging statement to throw down.
Good.
I think my list is going to, and I think I said this before another episode, same caveat. I genuinely feel these things. Everyone.
Okay.
I'm not doing this to troll Adam or as a bit, but I think my list will shock and disappoint you. I think you will think I've gone insane.
I sometimes think that's why you make lists. It's not. Okay.
That's why I want to verify up front as a caveat.
Yeah.
I sit there as much as I can and avoid being like, favorite. What does it mean?
Favorite. Right.
And for this, it means so I think we need to define companion, right? We talked about some basic, like, actual logistical definitions that I think are helpful. Like at once we were like, do they have to have had a health bar at some point? Like, do they have to be in danger? And I think we decided ultimately that it was any character that we're using more of the story definition, right? Any character that serves as a companion for your protagonist.
I think anytime, anybody,
however that's gamified out.
Yeah, anybody that's on the journey with you in some meaningful way, I think is that, that's how loose I got with it.
And we can argue if we feel like someone's gone out of bounds, but you know, everything in this life is ultimately, if you look closer and closer, you can unpack it further. So I'm sure the line is different for everyone, but I basically went off really letting myself roll into that word favorite, letting myself be nostalgic, because I usually try to be an objective reviewer and actually gauge, if I could on a chart, the companions I was most emotionally invested in, regardless of how good or bad I think the game is. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I'm truly rating the companions.
I was really strict with myself about, I have to have loved this game and cared about this character. It can't be like, I restricted the objectivity part of me. That's like, well,
I don't have to love
this.
The game.
Well, not the game.
I could love just the companion.
The character.
I'm saying
yes.
Other aspects of the game can blow.
Yeah.
That's allowed
and
for me.
For me, it's like, I had to have genuinely liked this person when I played it. It can't be like, oh yeah, in hindsight, I see how this was a great companion. You know what I mean? Like I forced myself to do that. For the same reason. So, I mean, without further ado, should we just hop into it? What do you think?
I have a little further ado, okay. Which is to ask, do you think, because I'm sorry, companions turned out also, side note, to be so much richer of an area than I even
broader.
Thought it would be.
Yeah.
Yeah. I need to at some point throw in a bucket of honorable mentions.
Yep.
And maybe a tag or two about why they're in there. Do you want to do that first? So we're sort of starting at the bottom of the hill, or
no,
do you want to do that at the end as like a cool down?
I want to do it throughout because I feel like there are times where they would merit mentioning because they're in this bucket. You know what I mean? Like that's how I feel like there's a few little buckets that are sort of being covered here, and I'm going to mention different honorable mentions that are like that, but this was my favorite of that type. Does that work for you?
Understood.
Yeah,
it works for me. Can we compromise on a middle path?
Okay, the center,
as we discussed before we rolled, is always the best. Centrism, always the best,
always good.
Can't hurt anyone with centrism.
Upset. Yep,
we're seeing that now in America. I have a big bucket of honorable mentions that are not ranked. But I do have a number 11, 12, and 13, and I'd like to just do a little spiel on them now that won't take very long.
All right.
That's okay.
All right.
Because the showman in me knows that this will make for an interesting arc of the episode.
Okay.
So
that I will do in addition.
Great. Yeah. Then we're going to pinch off a little bit, and then we'll get to the main course.
Good.
If I were to have a number 13, it would be BT from Titanfall 2.
Same.
Oh, nice. Same. Super, super well-realized buddy robot character that's so endearing. Way more than whatever the new Star Wars BB-88 or whatever. Like, BT is my favorite. I thought about the KOTOR guy, HK-47, but BT is really awesome. Number 12 would be Clementine from The Walking Dead Season 1.
Who
almost is too big to...
Because you
struggle
play
with whether she's truly a companion, because she's kind of main. But a companion in the sense that Lee is the adult you inhabit most of the time. And I don't know, he's caring for her.
She counts.
But that's why she bounced down.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay. And then number 11 for me, is Elizabeth from BioShock Infinite.
Oh, wow. Didn't make the list.
Wow. That's what I wanted to set up the stakes for is for me. We talked when we were first conceptualized this episode, we were like, well, unfortunately, Elizabeth from BioShock would, of course, shoot to the top because, I think these are things are true. Well, is she on your list? Can I spoil that?
I think my tone suggested that it has already been spoiled.
Then we'll talk about why she's important then.
Yeah.
But I thought that you would be interestingly intrigued to hear that she's my 11. So I've got 10 people
that's
above
great.
Elizabeth from BioShock.
I want to throw one or two quick ones out.
Please.
That are the same. BT, I also just wanted to mention, BT shouldn't have been good. The idea of BT when I heard about it after having played Titanfall 1.
A mech with
it was
a personality.
Like, this is a dumb decision, guys. But you know what? I was wrong. It was really good. I wanted to mention Morden Sullis from Mass Effect 2 and 3, who is just one of the people, but he was the Solari, right? Solari, is that right? Did I mess up the name of the...
I say Solari, okay. But there's no... evidence either way.
Well, I'm sure they say it out loud. The Solari scientist who is pivotal in managing the genophage in Mass Effect 3. And I think he just has a really cool arc and I really cared about it. And I liked that he seemed to be one type of character and then, you know, he sort of revealed, oh no, there's a lot of depth to him actually. So I really appreciated that. And finally, just because there wasn't enough time, playing with this character, Jackie from Cyberpunk. I really liked Jackie. I thought that character had a lot of potential, but unfortunately I don't get to play with him much.
I always want to shout this out because I think it's one of our major achievements on this podcast. If you listen to one of our Cyberpunk episodes, I believe we fixed the entire plot of Cyberpunk.
Yes.
Which is that Jackie should have survived as well.
Yes.
Been your companion, and the stakes should have been that the chip is in him and he's dying and you're talking to Johnny through him and you're worried about your friend going away because you had so much more invested in him than in yourself, who is a cipher.
Yeah
So I love Jackie.
Jackie was really cool, a good character, you know, gone too soon. All right, well, I think we should probably, having set it all up, do you want to do our first two and then we'll hit the break? What do you think?
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So
number 10,
in which way do you want to serpentine?
You start
10 me, 10 you, me, 10 me.
Yeah, okay. 10 you.
And now with all the time we killed, I'm going to be fairly succinct.
Okay.
But, especially, I don't know. It's 10.
Yeah,
right?
That's enough. Yeah.
What is it going to get? The two treatment? Come on. So my number 10 is sometimes named Pedro, sometimes referred to as just the banana or the sentient banana from the game My Friend Pedro.
Oh, wow. Okay. Starting in left field for me. I've never played that game.
Have you heard
of
it?
I've heard of it. I've never played it. Right. Tell me about it.
It's a Devolver. Yeah, it's a Devolver digital game. I mean, this can just be a straight up excuse to pitch the game. I do think more people should play it. The basic gameplay element is you are a guy who wakes up with no memory with a sentient banana with a smiley face that basically talks to you and tells you what your life is like and what it used to be and what you need to do next and what your personality is like. And you're suspicious the whole time of this banana, which is why it's kind of a Wheatley situation, honestly.
Yeah. Okay.
Because it's telling you to murder all these people, and the gameplay, which is pretty phenomenally fun, is sort of a John Wick like, but a unique one where I haven't seen this exact style of gameplay before, where you control both your gun arms individually and you can sort of slow time and use the environment to your advantage. So you'll end up just doing sick shit like diving in slow-mo through glass, shooting four or five guys, and then like kicking a skateboard at a dude and he trips and you go and kill him with melee or whatever. You can set up these awesome combos, and that's sort of what it's all about and designed to do, and bounce off the walls and stuff. And it's really, really fun and gruesome, and has like a twisted sort of Adult Swim-esque sense of humor and plotting that I enjoy. And I think the banana is very likable and sardonic.
Okay.
And a key note for me is I realized I actually liked, and I don't know how you could listen to this podcast much without getting this impression from me, but I'm the big story head. Games can be pure toys. They don't have to be story at all, but Michael favors story games. And so I favored companions who actually are fundamental to some turn of the plot.
That makes sense.
So like Navi is not,
right?
Yoshi is not, but he's awesome. So one thing I like about the banana from My Friend Pedro is that he's pivotal to the final twist in the story, which I guess I won't reveal because it's such an underplayed game.
Yeah, I don't think you should.
So I'll stop there.
That makes sense. I also have quite a few I realized that were narrative purposes.
Linchpins.
Yeah. That ended up being almost more important than functionality, though not always. My list is a mix.
It's hard for gameplay mechanics, but not impossible.
Not impossible.
That's an interesting discussion too. To make you invest in a character, the traditional tool that we use to invest in characters is story, right?
Yes.
It's so easy.
Yes. I have a few, though, that are for function.
That's awesome. I can't wait.
So
what's your 10th?
My 10th one, this one is going to seem like I'm making a troll list. I swear to God, I'm not.
Yeah.
But this one, I thought a lot about it.
Welcome.
I wanted to mention, as number 10, the Dinklebot from Destiny. Specifically, the first draft of Ghost. Yes.
Oh, okay. Ghost.
Yes. But not the redone Ghost, Ghost as voiced by Peter Dinklage.
But developers out there make a character called the Dinklebot.
Yeah, Dinklebot, right.
That's how
people talk about him on the internet. So he was famously replaced.
How demeaning.
Right? He was famously replaced. I think probably because they couldn't get him to sign on. I don't think it's because of the criticisms.
He's doing movies and shit.
Yeah.
He can't go forever on
That's
that.
Right. Yeah. They had to replace even Cade 6 for the same reason. But people like complained about the delivery and stuff of like his performance. And I really, really believe they nailed it with, who that, like, he was more of a character than Ghost became afterward. And I'm not disparaging Nolan North at all, but I think that Peter Dinklage brought a sort of like an even kind of sad feeling to the Ghost character, which really made the world seem more, less adventure-y and more like Star Trek. And it just sort of added a sense of like, this is like a Lord of the Rings situation where there's a lot of history that you have to kind of catch up with. And they kind of abandoned that. Like in every mm-hmm. facet of that game, they abandoned it. And I feel like they actually were,
except in the meta, like the cards online and stuff.
Right.
All that.
It felt very much like, no, this is a huge world that you're getting into. Like, yeah, you only get to play these areas, but like, there's so much more here. And I feel like Peter Dinklage's version of that character brought that out more. Like, certainly there were some wooden performances, but also he's a robot, and I thought it made sense. So I'm sure some people be like, what? I really thought he nailed it. He actually drew me into Destiny and is one of the reasons why I got excited about the game. And then, of course, it changed into, I think, more of an action adventure game that I also like. But RIP to the Dinklebot. I thought that was a really well performed and thought out character that they ended up pivoting in the wrong direction. So that's my number 10. Shall I?
Well, just because it's so.
Do you disagree?
Core to your. No. Just because it's so core to your experience of that loop. And I do enjoy that game, even though we've argued heatedly because I have diminishing returns in some aspects of it. All that is to say, asterisk, I had Ghost generally as one of my honorable mentions. So,
okay.
Additional ups, but I didn't want to have to mention
that's
it later.
Surprising to me. But cool.
Ghost is great.
I like Ghost too. He's
Ghost
useful.
Is, you're nothing in that right. game. Ghost is you, or like Ghost is the character.
Yeah, that's right. Ghost is the character. You're totally right. And I feel like
your armor.
I see. I kind of like the idea that Ghost isn't the character, and I think I get why they pivoted to it. But the Dinklage version of it, that was not true. Anyhow, so I guess I'll hit my number 9 next, right?
Go for it.
Number 9, because we're snaking around here. I know you're going to love this, Mike. It is Nick Valentine from Fallout 4, the noir synth bot from Fallout 4. And I'll tell you why.
Fascinating.
I'll tell you why. First of all, I needed a Fallout companion because I feel like that game, especially the fourth one, you do really need to carefully pick your companion, and you need a companion just to manage the looter aspect of that game. And Nick brings some pathos to the sort of this big, you know, fried out landscape. And he also brings kind of a fun aspect that Fallout 4 in hindsight is kind of missing compared to the other ones. Like Fallout 4 is not fun in the way that Fallout New Vegas is.
It's not as wacky wasteland as they
right.
call it.
And yeah. Nick Valentine colors it all with his like occasional, you know, sort of jaded private dick commentary, and it's awesome. And also people know I love noir stuff, so like it you know, that was an easy sell for me. But I really think he brings a lot of emotional interest to everything that you're perceiving, and also his story is kind of fun and sad and engaging, and most of the characters I didn't think did. Now I will say that I had Dogmeat as an honorable mention because I had to choose between them. I felt I know most people will pick Dogmeat because, you know, it's the dog and he's cute and a great combat. You know, he's good in combat and stuff. But for me, I just I thought that Nick Valentine brought that game to the level of fun that we're expecting from Fallout. What about you? Are you Nick Valentine?
Also, the voice actor doesn't shy away from and leans into, like, it is a classic.
Yeah. Yes.
Private yes. dick. Like, they don't even modernize it at all. He's just Dick Tracy.
It's so good.
It's pretty swell. Yeah. Well, it has a lot of character, as you said, compared to all the other companions in Fallout 4. Kind of forgettable to me. Not all to completely. I don't know. Paladin Dance is notable in that he sounds like George Clooney. But
Piper. A lot of people talk about Piper.
Yeah, Piper's all right. But I don't know. I feel like... And this is not a memorandum on the series, but I'm the big Fallout guy on the team. Yep. So I'll just say 4 also is good, but not the best Fallout by far. But of all the companions available in 4, man, you can't beat Nick, I don't think.
Well, he also points directly at the core conflict of that particular installment.
That's what I was about to say. And he embodies what the thematic moral centerpiece of that one is. Because he's a synth that has human-like qualities. Should he have rights? Whatever.
Exactly.
Great. Good stuff. He's key. He's clutch. And then I'll throw into the honorable mentions bin. This makes sense how we're doing this now. Mm-hmm. I get it. I put just on one line item all the dogs from all the Fallouts it's easy to invest in a dog. But I think it's so easy that I kind of... I'm like, yeah, of course you like the dogs. So like Rex from Fallout New Vegas. I'm super into K-9. The dog with the robot brain and some cybernetic parts.
Of course you are.
And then, of course, Dog Meat is actually from Fallout 1. So I just want to point that out as a smug Fallout originalist, that Dog Meat dates all the way back to Fallout 1 and is an incredible companion over 3 episodes of Fallout.
Dog Meat is a very effective companion because you get upset.
Helpful.
You get upset when the dog gets hurt.
Oh, and when he gets hit yeah. and whimpers, you're like, I hate that.
You
sound.
Get upset. Yeah. So in that way, it does work, and I see why people get attached. But Dog Meat doesn't have a lot of personality. Anyway, that was my calculus. What's your number 9?
Remember you said that I think that's really interesting towards the end of my
okay.
list.
Great.
Yeah, it's hard to invest in dog with personality, right? In life, almost not. I mean, I love my dog. Dogs have personalities when you get to know them, but it's hard to translate that to a game easily. Okay, number 9. Unknown or unnamed, I have a fetish for characters that are not easily identified.
Okay.
Or maybe his name is Transistor, but the sentient sword from the game Transistor.
Oh,
have you played?
Wow, this is going to be a list. I'm loving it.
Phenomenal game. Okay. Probably my favorite of the vibes of their games, but it's the team who did Bastion most notably.
Okay.
And then, I'm blanking. Sorry, I forget. Did they do Pyre?
I think they did. I definitely played Bastion. You and I talked about that offline once.
They're called Supergiant Games. Yeah,
that's right. You're looking it up. I'm filling right now.
Hades, of course. I'm like, they did the biggest banger of all time most recently, Hades. So most people would know them from Hades. But I really love the vibe of Transistor. Hades has better gameplay. That's true. But Transistor has awesome gameplay where you basically are this... woman named Red who fights with a sentient sword named Transistor that has the spirit of someone you once knew, potentially loved, locked inside it. And I find the writing really genuinely like darkly romantic. I ached for this relationship. I thought it was an amazing doomed love story. As you're using the sword and using RPG elements to unlock the sword's amazing powers and dispatch all kinds of enemies. And like, if you played Bastion and Hades, you know, Supergiant knows how to do third person. You're walking around slashing and hacking stuff and you do a bunch of cool combos. And Transistor has that in spades. And I mean, I guess it doesn't matter because we're not actually talking about the quality of the game, but I find Red very compelling. And because Transistor is like, your sword boyfriend, I found it. And people who've played Hades know Supergiant is great at evocative relationships.
Absolutely.
Hades doesn't really feature a companion character, or they might be here instead. But so far, I think Supergiant's best companion character is the sword from Transistor. I was really
What is it about the sword? Like, what can you give us some sense of what is the sword
haven't
like?
Played at all. Obviously, you're excited because it's, as it powers up, the sword is more and more helpful. It is your weapon. So the companion is directly the tool that you know, that makes it kind of have an auspice to it. But also as a character, it's kind of a benevolent, almost a therapeutic voice or an ASMR voice or like the evil Hal from 2001. But if it was benevolent, like the voice actor is very calm, but he's also not
That's
afraid
fun.
To be funny.
Yeah.
Well,
so a little bit.
It looks like that didn't go very well. Maybe we better blah, blah, blah.
Stanley's Parable, like a little bit of that vibe.
In terms of the wry observations he makes, but something I think you see in Hades that Supergiant has and is in Pyre as well is also they're not afraid to be embarrassingly vulnerable or actually go for like romance or emotion.
That's cool.
In the way that shows do, but games rarely do. So, I mean, he makes wry observations, but Stanley Parable never says anything like, and stay safe, I love you. You know, like that shit is in Transistor and I like
that. Yeah, like a real companion, like spending your life with
this. Well, yeah, he's Red's companion.
That's great.
In multi dimensions.
Well, you and I need to take a break and repeat our love to each other, you know, offline, of course. And when we come back, we'll be all loved up and ready
we'll
to continue.
Back in 18 minutes, which is how long that takes. See ya.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Rain or shine, every day is a great day for fishing, right? You got rain gear, but you can't overlook sunny day gear. A Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie has you covered on the sunniest days. Like, literally. I mean, who wouldn't trade a sunburn for a trophy fish? But why do it if you don't have to? Especially when this Solar Stream Elite hoodie is built with broad-spectrum UV protection. We're talking UPF 50. And it has airflow so you don't overheat. And what's the alternative? Putting down the rod every half hour so you can slather on some sunscreen. Seems like an easy choice to me. Columbia PFG has you covered with their Castback TC shoe. Its OmniMax cushioning and traction system helps if you're on your feet a lot, say, fighting a fish. Not to mention keeping you sure-footed on a wet rocking boat. So if you're going to be spending long days out on the water, and I sincerely hope that you will be, head over to Columbia.com/PFG and shop all their performance fishing gear.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi on a network that covers more roads than any other carrier. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls. Finish up that presentation or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Now I'm tired from saying I love you so much.
For 18 minutes. That was a big commitment.
Yeah. My mouth, throat is dry. All right, so we got to pick up the pace here, dude.
We have tarried too long.
In this act two, let's bust through some of these.
Your turn.
I believe it's my turn with number eight. I'm going to reverse order it this way. I bet some people can guess, especially if they're longtime listeners. I don't have to say too much about this guy. You know, there's a long, long history of wacky little obnoxious sidekicks that follow you around and are with you and make wisecracks and one-liners with a high nasal voice. But all of them, this is the one that annoys me the least and, in fact, is my favorite. And I think you'd expect some kind of special quality from Naughty Dog, the team behind Last of Us. But this is their platforming franchise, Jak and Daxter. And I'm talking about Daxter, the space weasel from Jak and Daxter. Yep.
I just like him. I get it.
But he's like an Urkel, or I don't know what to say about him. Yeah, he's funny. I like him.
Well, and there's so many characters that fit into that zone. Like,
he fills that slot
Wheatley,
for me. Yeah.
Wheatley falls into that zone. I would say
Claptrap,
who did not make my list, FYI. Potato GLaDOS was an honorable mention for me that I think fits that zone. So anyway, those are all honorable mentions for me, just mentioning that now. Okay, so just because I don't want to elevate this particular companion too high, but my number eight, I hope you're ready for this, and I hope you're ready to get mad, is Torrent, the horse from Elden Ring. The horse from Elden Ring, Torrent. And I'll tell you why. Yes, I know you're about to say that's not a character, Adam.
I'm not. It's beyond saying stuff about you. Just do what you need to do. Have fun.
Thank you. I intend to have so much fun. And that is, in fact, why I picked Torrent, because Torrent is the best horse in any game ever. The best.
Come at him, Epona fans.
Yes. I mean, honestly, I thought about, okay, is it Epona or Torrent? I picked Torrent because just for ease of use, as simple as that, you can summon Torrent at any point in time. The double jump is great. It's a really effective way to get across a landscape you don't have a map for. And of course, Torrent is sort of mouthed by like other figures who are telling you what Torrent's choice means. So like, Torrent is a character. Like, do you get emotional connection? No. But I think that part of a companion thing in a video game is, do they enhance the experience? And there is absolutely no doubt that Elden Ring is a much, much better game. The best game in the FromSoft, you know, suite of games because of Torrent.
It's not out. Yeah. I feel like you're any motherfucker can jump up wind tunnels and shit.
Right.
He's super fun to control. I agree with that. He's the most easily summable and unsummonable. I love that unlike every other horse game, there's no need for a, don't forget, you got to put your foot in the thing and get up on there.
You don't have to
there.
Whistle like, for the horse.
You're just on Torrent and you go. It's really fun. I think it's totally in bounds. I just think you're voting for the game more than the companion.
I'm voting for the you're not wrong. I'm voting for the companion because I think the choices they made about the mount here are
very
the best
smart.
Choices
no arguing,
of
yeah.
any mount in any game. And we have mounts in a lot of games. You know, and I really think this is the best one.
Better than Yoshi?
Don't spoil my list, sir, because now we're talking about emotional value, sir. Yoshi is a far more...
Well, no, I don't think when you talk about Yoshi... Okay, I'll save it.
That's okay.
But I think that's akin to talking about
amount.
Philosophy and being like, are we going to talk about Aristotle? Are we going to talk about fucking Plato? Like, Yoshi invented the concept of... You can get a second thing and be on it and control it or jump off it at will.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yoshi may still appear on this list. Spoilers. Great, okay. Good. So that's
Well, Yoshi's in my honorable mentions. So
Great. Well, Yoshi ranks for me.
Now we get your seven.
Thank you.
Right?
Yes, we will get my seven. My seven, and this one, this is going to be a strange one, but I felt it was important to pick something from Final Fantasy. In part because when I think of companions, Final Fantasy is...
You're the brand ambassador of one.
Kind of, and I feel like Final Fantasy...
Got to capture that fragment.
...is the most prevalent franchise with this idea of companions that you can play and, you know, deal with and everything. And I had to pick the version of the franchise that I connected to the most, which I'm sorry to tell you, fans, was a really old one, Final Fantasy II. That's the game when I played when I was a kid. And it was my favorite of the Final Fantasies and remains my favorite, not because it's the best, but because it's the one that I emotionally connected to. And so I picked a companion from Final Fantasy II. I think it's also IV. The number gets messed up here, but it's the one with Cecil. And the companion is Kane the Dragoon. Why Kane the Dragoon? Two reasons. One, there's a lot of riffing on the sort of
fiscal responsibility.
Because I like this podcast to continue. No, I'm just kidding. Because Kane represents a story of betrayal and forgiveness. And I think that's a cool theme in general. I feel very connected to that theme. And Kane betrays the group. And for a long time is not a playable character. In fact, you have to fight him. And then he sort of works his way back in finds forgiveness with the group, which I think is kind of fun. He's got a sort of thing with his dad, which is a theme in a lot of Final Fantasies, but especially that one. There's a lot of like, you know, dealing with your dad being disappointed, trying to follow in your dad's footsteps. Cecil's dad is the villain for a long portions of that game. And also he has a cool attack where he leaps off screen and he's gone for an entire turn. Cause this is back when these games were JRPG turn-based. And so like a lot of times when you would be fighting some big boss and they would do a damage to all of your crew, Kane wouldn't get damaged. And so cause he'd be up in the air. So therefore undamageable. Then he'd come down and do his hit. And I can't tell you the number of times that Kane ended up being the character that revived everybody else and therefore saved my turn.
And therefore you associate him with dopamine release.
Yeah, I mean, he was useful because he's a different dynamic that ends up saving your ass a lot. And the end of that game, spoilers, but hey, you had 40 years, so this is on you, or 30 years, or whatever. In the end of that game, he's the only one that doesn't join the group in celebration. He goes off and sort of lives alone from a distance and like wants to find some way to redeem himself still. Like he's like sort of a self-punishing character. Mm-hmm. And that connected for me when I was a kid. And the last thing is he is in love with the love interest of the game who the protagonist Cecil. He's also of course in love with the love interest, but Kane is basically not allowed to put his feelings out there. And that's an interesting dynamic between them. And that's a lot of complexity, I think, for a little 8-bit game.
FF2, yeah.
You know? And I remember it after all these years. I did not look it up. I was like, I remembered all that. So I picked Kane from Final Fantasy as one of my favorites.
Well, thank you, sir. My 8-bit honorable mention shout out is Nala, the flying pink dragon baby from the Lunar Eternal Blue game on Sega CD. She was cute and annoying, but my actual, it's me seven now.
It's you,
right?
Seven.
Seven, me.
You seven and six.
Okay. Me seven, me. Get ready. Brace yourselves.
So ready.
It's been underwhelming how well we're getting along. I'm like,
I can ruin this.
I can piss you off. This one will ruin the episode. I'm going with BB from Death Stranding. And if people aren't familiar, that is the baby.
Oh my God. Okay, go ahead. All right.
That's the baby named BB that stands for something baby, bridge baby, I think. Damn, I got to play it again. I'm rusty on the lore. I know that Adam and I disagree deeply about this, and I don't mind people who do disagree. I'm super not as into, like, the Metal Gear lore. I find ultimately cheesy and layered to a point of ridiculousness where it feels like Power Rangers-y to me. I love the Death Stranding universe and vibe and the rules of it and how they have to cry when they're exposed to the, and they eat the little pink nubbins. I love it. I just think it's a very fresh, evocative apocalypse. The oil lions with the gold faces. Anyway, BB is this bridge baby that it reminds me of when I was in junior high and they gave us, and this is true, I'm sure they don't do this anymore, so listen up, younger generation. There's no way they could still do this. But it was called Don't Have a Baby, Baby. And there was a program where they gave us mechanical babies that you had to rock and they had sensors in them. So if you dropped them, your teacher would know that, oh, you killed your baby. So in junior high, I had to like care for a baby and it would cry every few hours. You'd have to turn a key in its back to simulate rocking it to sleep. And it had little data collectors inside. Your teacher would be like, that's why you shouldn't have a baby. That's,
oh, yeah,
you know,
right.
It was all,
that's a high school
it was all
thing.
To make high school kids not bone.
Yeah.
It was like, don't have sex or this will happen to you.
this life
horrible
punishment
burden.
You'll get. Yeah.
And, and you know, you could compare it to a Tamagotchi or whatever.
Yeah, a little bit.
So BB is sort of that gamified. You constantly have to care for BB. The game is, there's a lot of hide and seek where you're hiding from these invisible monsters and they can upset BB. And if BB cries, obviously that's not good for hide and seek. So you have to tend for it. And I think the actual act of nurturing something, of course, forces you to invest some thought into it. And here's my main point. We're talking about emotional investment on this list, and it doesn't matter if it's cheap. Like, I will say this is cheap, but BB is a very realistically rendered, evocative human baby. I'm hardwired evolutionarily to care about that. So it is like, that was enough for it to claw its way up to seven on my list. I like the game. I like the world. I like that BB does turn out to be pivotal to the resolution of Death Stranding's plot. But at the same time, I'm like, you got to hand it to him for, like, you were talking about how you don't like when dog meat gets hit because of the sound. How soothing is it to rock BB by physically rocking your controller and he like giggles and smiles at you and little heart bubbles come out of his mouth? Like, I don't know. I found that very relaxing and it felt like everything was okay because BB was okay.
The only good argument that I can imagine for this inclusion, and it did convince me.
Is that it's a human. What are you going to not?
No, it convinced me.
Is one of my favorite exchanges in all of King of the Hill is when Cotton says of Hank, everyone hated that baby. And Jimmy Carter says, hated a baby? You can't hate a baby. It's a fucking baby.
No, anyway. But your argument is, you're right. That's a new, a unique engagement to put into a video game. And it is effective for making you care. So I got that. Yeah. I have to handle that too.
Not that unique because we have had pet rocks and Tamagotchis, but like it's an evolution of that idea.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're right.
All right. And now number six, which is, may shock you, may not. Okay. I don't know. The way the list is gone, you'll probably get it. But my number six is Ellie from The Last of Us.
That's right.
And
I get it.
I feel like that's almost too low to do justice to really the ending of that game, the last act of that game. From the point where, I want to talk about a few spoilers for The Last of Us Part 1 now. So if you're just playing the remake now, probably skip ahead because it's one of the most notable stories in all of video games. But from the point where Joel very suddenly falls on that rebar off that balcony and it's winter now and it's all on Ellie, to the point where he lies to Ellie's face, and that's, and you realize, oh, the game's going to end on that note. Obviously one of the most powerful storytelling experiences ranks with the best films I've seen and even some of the best books I've read, which is incredible for gaming. But also, yeah, so you counterbalance that against, so Ellie as a character, almost invaluable to me. What a legendary video game character. And then you counterbalance that against my issues with her as far as making this list. A, I like to expose people to stuff they don't already know, so it is a little like nominating the Radiohead or whatever.
Oh, you mean B, a great thing? You mean putting a great thing on a list? You're right about that.
I love radio. Right. That's that's what I'm saying, is they're objectively great. Everyone knows that. It's less interesting that way. I don't know that I liked her as a companion. She kind of just takes care of herself. She sort of just meanders around. So it comes down to like her dialogue with Joel as you play is very good. And then Adam and I had a brief discussion because, of course, when it's winter and Joel is injured, you play as her for quite a length of time. And in my compromise with myself was, well, it doesn't invalidate her from the list, but surely she can't be number one because she's not the textbook ideal of what I mean by video game companion. She's almost a dual character with Joel, especially given that she helms the sequel and you know that. So yeah, she landed at six on my list, and I'm done, because what are you going to say about Ellie? Listen to our Last of Us episodes. That's
number
fine.
Six. What number is my, am I on six and five? Is that where I am?
You're six and five. Yeah.
My number six is a little known character named Ellie from The Last of Us. Yeah.
Okay. But what's your logic for arriving at that slot, please?
Because you play as her as a main character for pieces of the game and also for the sequel. I think that's an argument against her being the best companion, because she's not just that. She's a companion, but then becomes the protagonist over time. Yeah, that agreed. Was why she couldn't be number one for me. I think you said it perfectly. She doesn't do much for you. She's really more, you're sort of like carrying a story unit around, you know, like
a story goblin.
Yeah, that's
you.
Really what she is. She's a story goblin. And it's great. You know, nobody's ever done it better than her. I think for emotional impact, I can't think of anybody that would surpass her. But I agree with you 100%. But yeah, because you play as her, didn't seem like she should be number one, because that seems like cheating. So that's where I landed. So my number five is one that I know will thrill Michael, and that is Cortana from Halo, from the Halo franchise.
Not only thrill me, but fill me with tumescence and
glowing
nerd rage
light
simultaneously.
Cortana, to me, like Cortana is what Navi and like all those kind of companions are supposed to be. Like, I feel like Cortana is the perfect version of like the know-it-all. I'm going to use this word, like the sort of sprightly companion. And there's like there's more of those than you'd think. In video games, she also is the character that humanizes Master Chief and makes him into a character. And I know that that's a point of contention between Mike and I, but I think that Cortana makes him a character, and he would not be one at all without her.
I actually have a lot of really interesting theories about that we don't have time to go into, but I think that lineage of the sprightly character dates all the way back to like actual folklore, like Will-o'-the-Wisps and specters. And I think it often has a feminine energy because it's a safe way for masculine franchises to explore the feminine side of the character. So Master Chief is all balls, right? So his feminine thoughts are Cortana instead. She's outside him, and she's
which is why it's interesting the trajectory that the franchise has taken with her and made her into sort of the big bad of, you know, of Halo. And then, you know, and then a bunch of stuff happened with Halo Infinite. We don't need to get into all that. You can listen to that episode. We talked about that. I think that Cortana is just like pure utility and pure pathos and distilled perfectly. There's a lot of great cutscenes with her. She makes the game more fun. And there's a bunch of other companions in Halo, to be clear. Like, there's soldiers all the time, right? And there's that great drill sergeant character. But without her, it's not Halo, you know? Again, Halo is probably the first person shooter that made me fall in love with first person shooters. So I have sort of a bias for it. And that's it. I mean, you know, Cortana's pretty good at that trope. And so she belongs on the list. I think it's your turn.
Honorable mention for me. First person shooter I fell in love with, Marathon on the Macintosh. Oh, good game.
That's interesting. By the way, I have one honorable mention here that fits because it's a different.
Yeah.
It's kind of it's like the opposite of this. And that is the Joker from Arkham City is an honorable mention for me. The Joker is the antagonist of Arkham Asylum and Arkham City. But it's Arkham Knight. That's the one that it's in Arkham Knight.
But then used as a companion in that one because he's dead. And
it's
in
awesome.
Head, yeah.
It's so good. And he colors the narrative in the same way that I think Cortana does. Like he's sort of an evil Wheatley before Wheatley goes evil, if you will. And it's really good. I just felt like there was too much of that on my list. So that's why he's an honorable mention.
Also, as far as I'm aware, he was the first use of a highly innovative thing that is now used in all horror games. Maybe PT. We just played PT on the monthly stream and it had some of this. But whoever invented the idea of you turn the camera around and suddenly something has spawned that was not there just seconds ago and it's triggered by when the camera moves away and back. Brilliant. And used very well with the Joker popping into existence when you were like, I was just looking there and now the Joker's there. Anyway, my honorable mention that fits in this segment is another story goblin who I like. Mimir from God of War.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he made the list because of recency bias, but I do love him as a story goblin, the disembodied head. And I love the fact that he literally dispenses stories because I actually think it's fitting if you're going to meander, let's be honest, uselessly around a half open world like God of War makes you do. A good use of that time is to hear little fables and Aesop's folk tales and shit. I like think that's a pretty decent
and
use of the time.
And I think we need it to fully appreciate the world they built. Like, I think it's a really smart decision.
They're teaching you Viking lore in case you didn't take that in school or need
and
to be caught
up. Yeah. We do need to be caught up for the most part. Yeah. And I really hope he's back in the sequel, which is coming out in less than a week from when we record this. So let's
hope.
Mimir.
All right, my number five, right? That's where we are. Yeah, because I did Ellie. My number five, look out. It's an extended flashback, sweetheart. Nick Valentine.
Oh, wow. Oh,
from
great.
Fallout 4.
Okay, that's fun.
Obvious Fallout 4, not my favorite Fallout. That would be 2 and New Vegas. Always vibe for that spot. But of all the companions in the entire franchise, the most appealing and memorable to me. I also love noir. I also love robots. I also love robots who are like kind-hearted. And he's one of the most reliably nice of the companions in that game. He's not a haunted, broken, alcoholic noir detective. He's a classic Maltese Falcon Bogart noir detective who like has his shit together and is fighting for good. Despite being haunted by some sadness. That's just right up my alley. I just think he's the best Fallout.
Yeah, he's an outsider, but not because he's a scumbag, but because he's an outsider, which is another of those Raymond, like those Chandler-esque tropes, you know?
But I'll use that as an opportunity to make up time in the air and hop to number four. And this dude, I'll be honest, started as number one with a bullet. Like when I sat down to brainstorm this list,
I know what this
first
one is.
Guy that floated.
I know what this is. Yeah.
Really?
I know.
Can we actually in real life bet any sum of money?
You
want to
bet $5?
I'll bet $5.
I'm
going to
put it in the Discord so you can see that I.
So this is what it'll be. Wait, before I look or you put it. You win if you're right. I only win if you've never even heard of this character.
Oh, then fuck.
That's my
okay.
Bet.
Well, then I'm probably not right. That's okay. I'll give you $5.
Boom. I'll get that later. My number four is Buddy, the alien from Another World, also called Out of This World, and the sequel Heart of the Alien.
Okay.
Are you aware of these games?
I was not.
All right. Well, he was number one for me in terms of played it. Like, he benefits tremendously from being played at the proper time when I was a child, receptive to, like, this is my nostalgia pick. And because of that, when I thought companions I actually care about, Buddy came to mind first and was number one until I started saying, like, let's calm down and be objective about this. There have been developments since this point in gaming and, you know, blah, and he fell a couple slots. But let me tell you about Buddy and let me tell you about Out of This World and Heart of the Alien. There's these great games. There's a third one made by the same developer called Flashback that people may have played more of. They are they're older games. They're done in a very unique art style that's kind of a simplified cell shaded 2D rotoscoping. Very hard to describe, but I highly recommend you look up the trailer for Out of This World, Flashback, or Heart of the Alien, and you'll see immediately. One thing unique about it is no other game has ever looked like them before or since. No one's really tried to recreate this look. It's unique to this developer. I don't actually know how they achieved it. It's a very cool look that I think, because it's not trying to look realistic, stands up to the test of the time. It still looks cool to me. And it has very fluid animations, blah, blah, blah. As such, I feel like you can get invested in the characters very easily. It's a very evocative game, especially for the time, where you're a dude who's transported to an alien planet, and this alien planet's in the midst of like a civil war with one side almost completely on the brink of destruction. And you meet an alien who you never find the real name of, but you refer to as Buddy because he's your buddy, right? He's your only friendly face in this world. And over the course of the game, at first he seems like almost a tutorial helping you get along, but over the course of the game you realize, and this is truly is, I researched because I wanted to be right about this, one of the very earliest games where this is the case, he begins to intertwine with you to the point where like you have to jump from a cliff trusting him to grab you and then help him climb up, or he'll manage the shields while you shoot through the shields at the guys, or you both get trapped in a cage together suspended by a chain, and the way to escape is for you to run back and forth together to get enough inertia to snap the chain. Like, he became part of the game and you actually interacted with him. Old hat at this point, amazing at the time. And then the sequel, Heart of the Alien, hit, where you play as Buddy and like find out all this horrible shit about his family getting slaughtered in this alien civil war. And he became such a deep and important character to me that when I play that initial one, it's just like the Ellie thing, okay, right? The fact that he becomes a playable protagonist in the second one, makes the first one all the richer for me. I recommend Out of This World. It's extremely difficult in the way that old games are. So maybe just watch a playthrough if you're actually interested. But if you're interested in getting your ass handed to you over and over until you get to see this, I think, very beautiful, minimal story of alien human friendship, Out of This World, also called Another World.
It's interesting
sometimes.
How you seem to like old hard games too, but you don't, but that hasn't carried over into the FromSoft space or even.
Well, I like Elden Ring. I just cannot.
Just
beat
can't get
it.
So it's not hard enough that you couldn't beat it, I guess.
Get to the end.
Fair enough. That's interesting.
I was able, it's hard, and specifically the way that a subgenre of old games used to be. If you ever played Space mm-hmm. Ace or Dragon's mm-hmm. Lair, it's hard in the sense that you'll run to the right and this panther eats you. And you're like, what the fuck am I even supposed to do? I run to the right, the panther eats me. And it does it over and over until you realize, oh, I got to run to the right, step left, jump up and grab the slagtite, and the panther will fall.
Yep.
Like, you have to learn exactly what it wants you to do and do that, and you get to
that
the next
That is stuff
screen.
That I find irritating in games now, but I didn't when I was a kid. That's interesting.
Right.
Okay, so I believe that leaves me at number four. So I'm going to do four and three, and then you're going to do three, and we'll take a break, right?
I think you should do four, and we should take a break and do the top three.
That sounds fine.
Okay, let's do that.
All right. My number four, again, because I'm such a brand conscious podcaster, and mm-hmm. honestly, because
Luigi, gotta love Luigi.
Don't laugh at the Marioverse, friend. There's notes coming from that. No, the character I picked here was Victor Sully Sullivan from Uncharted. And I'll tell you why. He's on missions with you sometimes, not often.
The stash.
Yeah, mustache is killer. Love his cigars. It's because he's the tone. Like, he perfectly nails the tone of Uncharted. And he does have some more emotional resonance than you'd think. And he makes it fun. He's constantly making it fun with like just comments and wisecracks and concerns, and he kind of provides a nice like buffer between the constant sort of love interest problems that we're having with Nathan Drake in that franchise, you know, where he's like basically mistreating his girlfriend then wife, right, like in some way or the other the whole time. And I think Sully provides this sort of window into like, why do we like Nathan Drake? Because he kind of gets him. And also a window into how sort of scummy that world can be
but he's like a charming version of that scummy world. So he's just a fun tone setting character. And there's a lot of those in companions and video games. I just thought without him, that franchise, I wouldn't want to play it. Like he really does get me interested in it. Enough to get
I actually
into it.
Think he's a more grounded Daxter. Yeah. I think he falls into that bucket. He's even got a funny nickname, Sully. Like he's wisecracking.
Yeah, he's a Wheatley. He's a Joker. Yeah. He's a potato GLaDOS. Yeah. Like he's one of those. But he's also got a good sort of pathos connection too, right? He gets us invested in both the caper and also he cares about cares about Nathan Drake, and because he cares about him, we care about him. And it's very simple storytelling, and it's very effective. And without him, there is no Uncharted, I would say. So Sully, that's my number four. And with that, we're going to scamper off into the third act of this podcast and come back where our companions either live or die in the top three. Shall we?
Oh, no, I didn't.
They
know
might
that
die.
Was a stake.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm adding that. Oof.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Rain or shine, every day is a great day for fishing, right? You got rain gear, but you can't overlook sunny day gear. A Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie has you covered on the sunniest days. Like literally. I mean, who wouldn't trade a sunburn for a trophy fish? But why do it if you don't have to? Especially when this Solar Stream Elite hoodie is built with broad spectrum UV protection. We're talking UPF 50, and it has airflow so you don't overheat. And what's the alternative? Putting down the rod every half hour so you can slather on some sunscreen. Seems like an easy choice to me. Columbia PFG has you covered with their Castback TC shoe. Its OmniMax cushioning and traction system helps if you're on your feet a lot, say, fighting a fish. Not to mention keeping you sure-footed on a wet rocking boat. So if you're going to be spending long days out on the water, and I sincerely hope that you will be, head over to Columbia.com/PFG and shop all their performance fishing gear.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi on a network that covers more roads than any other carrier. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls. Finish up that presentation or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
All right, with the stakes greatly raised, what will cause our beloved companions to die or live? What does that even hinge on?
I don't know,
it's
a dumb bit I was doing. But you yes-handed
okay, great.
It, and I appreciate that.
If we finish the episode, they all live. How about that?
Yeah.
Easy bar to step over. But let's keep serpentining. So great. Adam's going to hit us with his.
Number three
favorite video game companion of all time.
Number three all time. And this last top three is tough. It's going to be Yoshi. It's going to be Yoshi from Super Mario World.
The long tongue of Yoshi has licked your heart.
And snatched it and chomped it into a fireball of truth, which I'm spewing at
an
you
apple,
now.
An apple, I guess? Yeah.
Yoshi was an incredible discovery when I was like, I don't know what age I was, 9 or something, when I got Super Mario World. I didn't watch the commercials and stuff, so the existence of Yoshi was a surprise. And every time I've ever played as Yoshi, I've had a great time. I think they've explored a lot of concepts about what mounts can be through Yoshi, not just in that game, but really all the subsequent games where you've ridden Yoshi. And I think Yoshi's a great tone setting addition to a franchise that's the most significant in the history of video games. For me, like, it's a little bit sentimental. Like, he's not the best mount ever, that's Torrent, but he's a really great mount. I love that when you ride him, you get new musical elements. So
I think it's notable that Torrent is maybe the first AAA, because Mario was AAA at the time, right? That was Premier Gaming. First AAA mount since then that has embraced the Yoshi also, you just snap on and snap off. There's none of this fucking around, like, realistically
you
getting
on. You
do
have to feed him to have
Torrent
him grow.
Almost is Yoshi. Yeah. Yeah, but I just think it's interesting how Torrent is a truer inheritor of Yoshi's vibe than many other mounts. That's a great point.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, most mounts aren't a part of the combat, and Yoshi is. Ooh. You know.
Yeah, and this is so old man to say, but I really think people say 15, 20 years younger than us who are into gaming, well, that would make you 10. You could still game. I don't think you can understand when it happened in real time. How amazing it was to get a Yoshi. You felt it was like a bump of cocaine.
Was.
You felt unstoppable. Meaning, like, not just Yoshi to be added to the Mario ecosystem, but Yoshi was such a cool new aspect of the Mario games that when you were playing Super Mario World, I don't know about you, but all I wanted was it. You were like, oh no, I lost my Yoshi. When can I get another Yoshi? Gotta be on Yoshi. I can jump double high. I can eat shit, poop out coins and shit. Like, Yoshi takes everything to
Yoshi
the next level.
Added
yeah,
a bunch
sure.
of mechanics that you wouldn't expect. Like, you know, some different color shells create different things that he can spit out.
Poops,
again,
yeah,
I think the addition of a rhythm section to the music tells you a lot about what Yoshi means to Super Mario, like the franchise. And that is, like, there's a harm. This is a harmony part, right? Like, and again, they're messing with a formula that completely worked. Like, Super Mario 3 was a fantastic game. And so when they're here to make Super Mario World, they didn't need to add Yoshi. We didn't need Yoshi, but man, now you can't imagine a Mario game. Certainly not a side scroll without him. And, you know, I've enjoyed the way they've incorporated Yoshi into even the 3D Marios, like Super Mario Sunshine.
Or Smash.
Yeah, Smash. But also in Odyssey, you get to possess Yoshi, which is fun. Yoshi, to me, defines a companion that adds something that becomes inextricable from a game. And, you know, and he did it to the most beloved video game character of all time. So that's my number three.
It's kind of like BT in that way, yeah.
Absolutely,
a thing
you
ride that also has personality.
Is a Yoshi. Yeah. You're completely right about that.
Yeah, he adds to your killing power immediately, and that's why you value him in part. Cool. Yoshi was definitely, as I said, on my honorable mentions, but I will say, if this means fucking Captain Price is in your top two, I'm going to throw the microphone at the wall.
First of all, never we'll shit on Captain out. Price. How dare you? How dare
we'll
you?
We'll find out. Well, he's an honorable mention for me, but that's it. Specifically, same. Captain Price from the world from Modern Warfare 2.
Yeah, he's an honorable mention. I don't want to keep you in suspense. Yeah. He's an honorable mention. Yeah.
Not the reboot that just dropped. My number three is Lieutenant Kim Kitsuragi from Disco Elysium.
Oh, I love it.
Let's be clear. Lieutenant Kim doesn't care for you. He's off put by your obvious drinking on the job, and he's not here for your bullshit. And that's what I love about him as a companion. It's so rare in a system. Video games are designed to release dopamine and make us feel like we're growing and learning skills and our points are going up in an artificial world that's designed to allow for that. And it's rare when the companion, and he does it in a way that, it does skew endearing, but I still think Kim Kitsuragi is far down the road of companion who actually calls you on your bullshit, is saying uncomfortable truths at you or judging you, or like rubbing salt in the wounds if you make a moral action that's dubious. He's the guy standing there going like, you didn't make that decision in a vacuum, by the way. I'm watching you. Like, that was pretty fucked up. I just love his vibe. I love the character performance. I think the art, like what the character design actually looks like, is indelibly iconic. I love Lieutenant Kim Kitsuragi. I will even like Google fan art of him, which is so rare. He's got, that, like, what a level of interest in a video game. I'll be like, so what are the fan artists? How are they interpreting Lieutenant Kim? Show me that Lieutenant Kim fan art, because I just love
him so
much.
He's got such a great way too. Like the way that he deploys that sort of skepticism is through like the gentlest, mm-hmm. not even sarcasm, but like deadpan answering of your questions. Like his professionalism is so amped to like the max,
unimpeachable,
that he never overtly says like, you're a drunk, shape the fuck up, which he could do and it would be reasonable, but he never does, and that makes him lovable, you know, like because totally. Like, man, he treats you with so much more dignity than you deserve, and that is cool.
He's like, yeah, a wharf.
Really. He really is.
He is honorable, yeah, to his but core.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, in a way, he sort of represents the ideal of what you'd like a police officer to be. Right. Like, and that's kind of interesting.
Right. He's a responsible cop.
A morally driven, careful, thoughtful cop. Like that's
by the book.
That's,
cop,
you know, what you wish that's what you wish it was. Great. Love that pick. Who's your number two?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're ready.
We're going that
you're going hard.
Okay.
Bro.
Number two falls into the Sully Daxter sort of vibe. And I think that's why he's not my number one, because it is a he. I like doing the clue.
You love it so much.
Find out at the end. I love it. It's a character I care a lot about because of the extended universe stuff. It's a character you do use functionally in the game, which I appreciate, especially in this genre of game, which it's difficult to create a companion who's also routinely functional within the game. I'm talking about everybody's favorite Little White Rabbit, basically the Daxter, Max from Sam and Max Hit the Road.
That's a really important franchise to you, I'm realizing.
Incredibly important to me. Sam and Max, yes, very much so. I am among the very few people who still play, you know, they're still making point-and-click Sam and Max games.
Yep.
I play them. They are not as good as Hit the Road, but the voice acting is still reminiscent and the jokes are still kind of there because Steve Purcell still writes them. And so I'm still invested enough. I don't recommend them, but I do highly recommend Sam and Max Hit the Road. It's an animated point and click where the puzzles are actually very funny, meaning like the solutions, right? In every point and click adventure game, if you don't know this old obscure genre of game, but Disco Elysium also is one. You combine unlikely items to arrive at solutions usually. And Sam and Max Hits the Road is one of the few times where I found not only the dialogue trees funny, insightful, surprising. Oh, that's how I navigate this. That's funny. The solutions are funny in there. You're like, oh, that goes with that. That's a joke that would go with that. And I don't know how to explain it better than that. They actually make bits out of it because Steve Purcell, if you're not aware, the creator of Sam and Max, is an incredibly talented comic artist and legendary. Like the Sam and Max comics are unimpeachably works of art and so, so funny. He writes sort of in like the, I would say almost a Jack Kerouac, very like dense Doonesbury or Transmetropolitan style. And he wrote the script for Sam and Max Hit the Road, and he still writes the script for most of the Sam and Max stuff. And Max is fucking hilarious, and hilarious in a way that I'm sorry, video games can rarely aspire to be, and Daxter could only dream of. Like Daxter jokes, I would even say Wheatley and GLaDOS jokes, they approach what I would call like real comedy. But Max actually is real. The things Max says are like, I'm like, now that's a well-crafted joke.
Dude.
As someone who's devoted 15 years to learning comedy math, that's a good joke. And that's because Steve Purcell is a great comedy writer. But Max fucking rules. His voice is amazing. He's hilarious. Every joke they make about him is so funny. Where does he keep his gun? What are the implications of that? Like, Max is amazing.
That's a potent endorsement of the comedy. If you're willing to put it above GLaDOS and Wheatley. Okay. Fair enough.
Or like Pixar jokes. Yeah. You know how they're cute?
Yeah.
And you're like, that
sometimes
was cute
they're
and
also
funny.
Great.
But Max says stuff where you're like, wow, that's
right.
Funny.
This is truly great. Yeah. I get it. I understood the distinction. Yeah. Okay. I need to play one of those. I've never played it. So that is
That's the one. All the other ones
as
are sort
of
lackluster in their
I think
design,
six of the games you've listed so far.
My real endorsement is that people read the comic book collection called Sam and Max Surf on the Highway. Find that and read that. Start
Great.
There.
Okay. I'm sorry to say that the rest of my list is probably pretty predictable. But number two is Elizabeth from BioShock Infinite. And she's incredible. She's I think, in a way, the best companion ever, who was designed to be an enhancement of your game experience. And here's what I mean by that. She is both the narrative and the color commentary, and she adds additional functionality to the game. She does all the things you want a companion to do. She does all of them. She's also a great sort of satire slash response to the phenomenon in gaming at the time, which was escort missions where, you know, the person basically just protecting them from being attacked by baddies, and then they die or they don't. And if they don't, you pass. And if they die, you got to do it again. So she was like a response to doing that, and sort of, I think, inadvertently kind of destroyed that trend because she was done so well. Like, so we don't have as many escort missions like that anymore. So she's all those things. And also she is a consolidation of the concept of little sisters in BioShock and an enhancement of what that little sister concept means. So they did a lot with this character. I mean, they built the entire franchise around this character, and I think she was a real home run. If you haven't played BioShock Infinite, we covered that years ago on this podcast. But it's still really fun to play, and she is the emotional center, and I don't want to say too much more about it because I think her story is really compelling. I also really liked the way they deployed her as the femme fatale in the DLC where you return to Rapture. Did you play that? The Noir DLC? I thought she was cool in that too.
Yes.
Different.
And I've played BioShock Infinite two more times since we covered it.
At least once more.
And I've lowered my esteem for it significantly, which is why she dropped down to 12 or 13 for me. She is seminal. She has some Yoshi points, in the sense that I think in the 3D space, you're right, that she popularized. Developers went, oh, duh. This should be the direction of, a companion that throws you ammo and shit. Players will appreciate that much
up
more
fighting
than having
spaces.
To keep the thing alive.
You know, like, she also opens up possibilities, which is cool.
Totally makes sense. But for me, she fell in my esteem because that is the way in which she's helpful is basically that. She's just pre-programmed to occasionally throw you ammo or elixirs, and that's fine. And then I also feel like the whole BioShock thing has... I'll tell you what's really done it. Arcane.
Oh, interesting. And, that's a good point.
I feel like they've taken the BioShock reins, and their games, when I play them, feel so much more nimble, and I feel like the powers are more cool. Like BioShock, both of the BioShock and BioShock 2 and BioShock Infinite now, when I play them, are starting to feel dated and clunky in the actual like control of them versus Arcane games.
That's an interesting point.
But I'm sorry.
Not at all.
She's still very important in the history.
I know that we are either
that.
Going to or have already talked about Dishonored, and we've definitely talked about Deathloop.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's bad to say that Arcane has made basically three games in the span that this game was released and has really iterated on them.
That are all interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And the last thing I'll say about her, or this at least, is take me with a grain of salt, because another reason she's lowered in my esteem is probably my fault, in the sense that I like that she's totally important to the resolution of the plot. The plot essentially is her, but I don't actually understand the ending of BioShock Infinite to this day. So that lowers its esteem for me. I'm like, I literally can't suss out what happened.
Like they yada yada the multiverse
a bit. I feel like it's glossed over, but maybe I'm just dumb.
Well, that might be a fun thing to talk about. We have a multiverse podcast on a Patreon, which you guys, by the way, just side little break. You guys, if you're interested in more of our conversations, we have other podcasts that we do on a Patreon called patreon.com/smallbeans. On there is a multiverse podcast that this might actually fit into that. So we could talk about it there maybe.
If we didn't have to play, but we just covered the plot, I think
that
would be fine.
We probably could. But anyway, I'm going to move on from that to my number one, if that's okay.
Yeah,
my number one. Go. Somehow you started and finished. Very clever, sir.
I don't want to be last. You're going to be
mad. I
doubt
I will. You, however, are going to be glad, because my number one is Kim Kitsuragi from Disco Elysium. Yeah, I thought he was fantastic.
What an honor.
I thought he was fantastic.
I'm honestly surprised Disco got through to you.
Cam Kitsuragi is one of the best characters in video game history. He's so well written. Like, he'd be a great character in any medium, but he's incredible in a video game because you're constantly doing things as the protagonist of that game that are outrageous. And the way he is really softens the edge of that game in a great way. And also kind of holds up that, like, it keeps the game from spiraling into bullshit. You know, like, a lot of games spiral into bullshit. And by that, I mean, like, you know, they just become absurd. They become sort of Grand Theft Auto playgrounds where you can make any choice and it's funny and like, haha, that's what I did. And like, even Fallouts and Skyrims can sort of descend into that if you decide I'm going to kill the shopkeep today. Mm-hmm. And like, now he's dead. You know what I mean? That kind of stuff. Kim Kitsuragi is sort of a backbone for Disco Elysium that prevents the game from spiraling into not the story, into not the game it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Not just as the partner and as the police authority figure, but really as an emotional grounding point. Like, you do start to feel like, I wish this guy was my friend. I wish I could befriend this guy, because I feel like being his friend,
he'd be a good influence.
Being his friend would make me a better person. You know, it would actually validate me as a person, as a cop. And I think that tells you a lot about the value of being a good person, a thing that we don't really explore culturally like we ought to. And I know that sounds like an old guy talking, but honestly, man, Kim Kitsuragi is like a great counterpoint to all these like sort of anarchy fuck you characters that we all think are fun. Here's a character that's a great no, this is also good and it matters, and I personally really responded to him, and I think he should be looked at by video game designers as the benchmark to clear for how to make a complex and interesting companion that you're along the journey with for the rest of your game. He is the benchmark, in my opinion. So that's my number one.
Nice. I think this is ideal because there's conceptual room for both of our number ones. They're in completely different directions. And I don't think you'll have a huge problem. Or like,
we'll
I think
see.
We can both appreciate each other's very easily without hurting our own. So I mentioned how it's so hard to actually translate the subtle complexity of a relationship that you have with a pet,
yes.
Right? Especially to a series of, as it usually is, oh, you can pet it, you could feed it, you can clean up its poop. It does a handful of maybe 6-7 animations that remind you of, oh yeah, dogs do circle around and lie down. Oh yeah, dogs do hop up and down, right? Like that's how we try to intimate that. I kind of don't understand to this day the magic behind the handcrafted like personality and movements of Trico from The Last Guardian.
Wow,
my number one pick.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know you liked that game
because
that much.
I love,
interesting.
I mean, not to besmirch my human friends, but I have very special relationships with my dogs. And Trico, I know, was designed by the creator Fumito Ueda, also responsible for Ico, Shadow of the Colossus. Very unique vision for a developer, right? You know, an Ueda game.
Absolutely. And they have a similar vibe to him. Yeah.
And I feel like lately, maybe he's just quiet, like, cause he takes his goddamn time, but gosh, I want another one. Like, what's this dude's next vision? I'm waiting for it. I feel like he's kind of left the discourse in a big way. And I thought The Last Guardian should have been talked about.
He's very spiritual. He's a very spiritual creator.
It rises to me to the level of spiritual feeling. Like it juiced my spiritual feeling gland. In the same way that Shadow of the Colossus kind of does, but to the level that like a Studio Ghibli film does, it really felt like playing a Studio Ghibli movie. And if you're unfamiliar with The Last Guardian, that story is about keeping this giant creature alive and helping it. You are the companion, essentially. It dominates the screen. All you care about is its survival. The plot actually centers around what happened to it. Why is it alone? What's going to be the future of this animal? And you form a relationship with this animal through the course of the game that is so different from dog meat, right? At the core of the game are these complex interactions, puzzle-like, like actually get the feeling of training a pet and being rewarded for that, having the pets start to show you go from being shy to showing you affection, to showing you fierce loyalty to the point that it will fight for your life, right? In these dramatic epic. And it happens to be this super cute thing that's a mix between a cat and a dog
and
with
a
like dragon claws and little horns, and it flies around. And I've read about the development, right? They did all kinds of studying that usually animators would do. They studied hours and hours of footage of, you know, birds, cats, dogs, and like the whole goal of the development cycle was to make Trico feel like a real pet you have a relationship with. And I think they nailed it. Like Trico, I would die for Trico.
Wow. I think
Trico's my Yoshi, but like it has some more depth.
I played about three quarters of this game.
You didn't finish it. The end is heartbreaking.
Great. Yeah. Well, maybe I will. Maybe I will finish it because I think I still have that saved. This was a game that people were really let down by because the hype was so high for it. And then it was a little bit of a quiet, understated game ultimately.
Oh, interesting. I actually wasn't engaged with the discourse. I played it in a vacuum.
It was supposed to come out.
I never heard anyone
like 5 years or something before it did. And like every year people were banging the drum on it. And then it came out and it was pretty good. And like that just wasn't, you know, what people were looking for. That's my memory of it. It is a good game. It's absolutely a good game. It's very unusual. Yeah. It's very quiet. It's not like most games feel like they're movie premises in that you're going to have fighting and combat and, you know, goals and all this, like a hero's journey. And this feels much more like sort of like a quiet afternoon, you know, that has big moments.
There's a climactic fight at the end, but other than that, you're just navigating through these ruins.
You know, and it's very morose, but not desolate, but just a little sad. It's really unique. It's worth a look if you haven't played it. I think, it's got to be cheap now because it's been like 4 or 5 years. So, you really should check it out. I think he's a great pick because he is a puzzle. Like dealing with him is the game and also is the puzzle of the game. And you're constantly figuring out ways to make him do something. And you're not even sure what he's going to do. That's the other cool thing about it is like he's not a dog. He's not a cat. He's not a bird. He's a unique creature that you're trying to figure out. And so there's an alien aspect to him that the puzzle sort of like the puzzles revolve around, like, what would he do if I did this? You know, like and it's really great. You know, that part is really awesome. So if you're looking for your heartstrings get pulled by a digital creature, this is the best of that I can think of.
Yeah. You love training. You like your relationship with your pets.
It's good at that.
Man, I like that you picked a human companion. I picked an animal companion. Now I want a chest tattoo of Lieutenant Kim Kisaragi riding Trico like Falcor, you know, with his fist
put it
up
in my neck,
screaming,
you know, right in my neck.
So good. Okay. We've gone long, but let's whip out our honorable mentions real quick. I'm going to go first if that's all right. Cause I got to do the number one, be the ultimate number one guy. I guess Tails.
I knew it was going to be whatever.
The ones that are actually interesting, forget that. Tails is whatever. He's good in the cartoons. Trip, short for Tripitaka from the game Enslaved. Mm. I think that's a great underrated game with an unfortunate title. I think, I don't know, Enslaved gives you a very particular, sounds like Manhunt or some shit. But it's not, it's a pretty interesting, almost Mad Max Fury Road-like post-apocalypse that's very bright and yellow and deserty, where the whole thing is that you're locked by this collar to this woman Trip, and she's from essentially the Green Place. It is very Fury Road now that I think about it. And you have to travel together, and it's, you know, you're codependent, which is great. Very much like Buddy from Out of This World. Enslaved is a cool, like, hidden gem if you haven't heard of it. Another Ueda one, I almost put her in here, but she kind of gets annoying by the end. Princess Yorda from Ico, the other
that's the one I have not played.
Might know. She's a ghost princess with horns. She's a little too dependent. Like, she won't, you'll be like, just walk across the plank. Oh, I got to hold your hand to walk. So that's why she fell off the list for me. But an interesting original exploration into what a companion-centered game can be. And last but not least for me, just to piss Adam off. I don't know why it'll piss him off. This will just be a string of nonsense words to him. But the clay conductor from Sunless Skies.
No, I don't care. Sure. Why not?
Yeah, exactly. People who do care about weird text-driven Victorian steampunk games about piloting a train through this through space, essentially. There's this game called Sunless Skies that I really like that Adam would hate more than anything. I delight myself thinking about him playing it. And you pick up a bunch of companions who helm your locomotive along the way. And my favorite one is this old man who's made of clay called the Clay Conductor.
That's cool.
I'm done.
Very quick, other honorable mentions. Tali from Mass Effect. Her story, particularly how it ends in Mass Effect 3, is great. It's really good, and it's very moving, I think. She stands in for basically the rest of the companions. I like Jack and Rex, too, but Tali is the one that I feel like you're with her the longest, and she has a really significant corner of the galaxy that she represents. So her Kazooie from Banjo-Kazooie. I mentioned Kazooie not because I think Kazooie is the best character, but because I like the odd couple thing that that franchise is doing. And Kazooie is additional functionality for Banjo, and also kind of is sort of the energy of that franchise, like the attitude of it that we kind of need. So, but also, you know, it's a very rudimentary character. So I just didn't think it was, she was quite good enough to make this list, but Banjo-Kazooie is a fun franchise and she's part of why that's true. We mentioned BT, that's right. And, I also wrote on here because I know Mike loves this, Quiet from Metal Gear Solid 5. I'm just kidding. I did not write that down.
She's the one that has to be naked to live.
I just wrote down to make you angry. Yeah. Although I will say that when you get Quiet outfitted with a silenced sniper and you have a silenced sniper.
Oh, she does make the game. It's hardcore calling her in and just saying, kill that guy.
She's awesome. She's an absurd character.
No, the Metal Gear games have incredible gameplay. I just think
really
the lore
is
dumb.
And her character is bad, bad and dumb. But as a function of the game, like a lot of the companions in Metal Gear Solid 5 are pretty good. Yeah. They just, all of them were silly in one way or the other. Even the dog that people seem to love, D-Dog, just was a little silly for me. I feel like we did it, Mike. Do you feel like we did it? I think we're done.
I do feel like we,
okay,
I feel like we're
then,
done.
How about we, you know, finally split ways, end this third act and let people go about their busy day. What do you think?
Cool, cool. Companionship over.
He says that literally every time we stop recording.
Work complete.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back. Plus, no payments for 90 days and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Are you looking to build this year? If so, there is no better time than right now to start planning and to get your spot on the construction schedule. If you need a garage, a stall barn, a storage for vehicles, RV, boat, collectibles, or even a shop for your farm, hobbies, or car restoration projects, visit MortonBuildings.com and start your construction process. With superior materials, craftsmanship, best-in-class warranty, Morton buildings are made to last for generations. At Morton, the difference is in the details. From their cutting-edge innovations to their craftsmen in the field, they are dedicated to surpassing expectations. Their legacy of excellence spans more than 120 years, and Morton Buildings is 100% employee-owned with more than 250,000 satisfied customers. That means they're the industry leader you can trust. When you choose Morton, you'll experience quality at every step of the building process, starting before the walls even go up. Visit MortonBuildings.com to get started today.
You ever get the feeling the city walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating your soul? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe chase some elk, fish a private stream. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there, and finding your own piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, location, the kind of hunting or fishing you dream of. Land.com. It's where the adventure begins.